gives it to Fabinho, 30 yards out, dinks it over the top, onto Mane! And Liverpool lead! Sadio Mane, so wasteful in midweek, but takes his first big chance, and Liverpool get the goal. It's Liverpool 1, Manchester United 0. To the end line, drills it back, under Hayes in, might well fall for Shaqiri, drill back in, and it's into the back of the net! Jerdan Shaqiri in front of the cop restores Liverpool advantage. Shaqiri to Firmino on the edge of the area, sliding it through the legs, back to Shaqiri, deflection! Jerdan Shaqiri, the super sub, has scored a second and Liverpool third, and they are heading back to the top of the Premier League. Surely now Manchester United are beaten.
They play in relation to their qualities, the same way the opponent played in relation to their qualities. They are fast, they are intense, they are aggressive, they are physical, they are objective. They play 200 miles per hour with the ball and without the ball. I am still tired just to look at Robertson. He makes, I think, 100 meter sprint per minute. Absolutely incredible. And these are qualities. But it's hard for my players to work hard like they did and to lose exactly in the moment where we didn't believe that we would lose.
There we are, commentary of yesterday, thoughts from Mourinho and Pat Nevin's theme song. Hello, Pat.
How are you doing? Are you all right, lads?
Yeah, very good. It's interesting, Kevin Kilbane during that commentary clip, he doesn't like that when a goal's about to be scored, he can be heard on CoCom going, oh, I don't know, I think it's okay.
No, that's not good. You see, I'm stealing Nathan's moment, because Nathan's very precious like that as well, so I feel as though I'm stealing his moment. It's not good, it doesn't sound good.
Is that bad co-commentary etiquette, Pat? I don't know.
Only in extreme situations can you, I think you should come over. I think we've been trained, Kevin and I, very similar on that. You allow the commentator to have his moment, because that moment's going to be, as you know, replayed, it's going to be clipped, it's going to be cut. And even when a commentator's finished that hit, you give it two beats, you give it a second at least, and then you come in on the top of it after that, because it makes it easier for the edits, for afterwards, and also allows the commentator that moment to kind of build it. Then you say something different at a different pace, different speed, maybe up or down, or add to it. So there's a kind of skill in it. But there are moments, Kevin, just like you say, like now and again, you go, wow!
Yeah, I'm probably doing it a bit too much. That's the thing, though, Pat. Probably, yeah, overselling it a bit, really. So I've just listened to myself a couple of times when we come in and we do this. So yeah, I've got to cut it out, I think.
What else do you do wrong? Let's really dig in here.
Probably Nathan will tell you how much what I do wrong, or Dave Mack will tell you what I do wrong.
Yeah. And is it the same on TV? You let the commentator do his thing, and then is it the replay that you come in over, or where do you come in? Celebration?
Yeah, doing TV, try and wait for the replay. Certainly don't come in before it. Let the pictures breathe, Joe.
Oh, wow. That's profound.
You know.
What's the Pat Nevin rule on TV?
Don't go on it, because I've got a face for radio. That's the answer for me.
I tell you what, Pat, I've seen you all over social media over the last day or two.
Have I?
In relation to Spotty. So I can't remember which one of the BBC's feeds they've put you on, talking about your moment of the year. So they've had you all over it yesterday. So you were obviously at Spotty last night, weren't you? And they were asking you your sports moment of the year.
I was actually doing it for BBC Radio, so I was on the whole show. So there's a TV show, but there's also a radio show, and the radio show has to be done slightly differently. So myself, John Emberdale, and a bunch of guests. And then what we fortunately had is every single one of the award winners comes straight from the award and sits beside us and talks to us.
Oh, nice.
And we've got our own audience of about 100 people as well. And it was brilliant. It was really interesting. But, you know, you have to talk about different sports, like in sports you have limited knowledge of. But I have to say, I've been once or twice before and I didn't really enjoy it. To be honest, it's not my kind of thing. But working on it was different and I really liked it. So,
yeah, good.
I can't remember what they said. What I said, my moment it was a year, possibly the golfing.
I can tell you what you said. You said it was Cristiano Ronaldo's overhead kick for Real Madrid against Juventus, because you're at the game.
The one that I was actually at.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, just as you mentioned talking over it, I immediately jumped back to that moment because that was a moment I went, oh my God. So, and moments like just hit you like that. And there isn't a moment. It's everyone's got their own moments. So I've thrown mine out there. Come on, you two.
I was at the game. I was at that game that night too, Pat. So that was one of my standout moments, just witnessing that over a kick. It was just incredible. My moment, probably my standout moment of the last year, was commentating on Russia beating Spain on penalties in Moscow in the last 16 of the World Cup. That was just that night. It was just incredible in Moscow that evening when Russia put them out, yeah.
Okay, very good. Let's move on to events at Anfield, Pat Nevin. So it's very tempting here to talk about Manchester United because their decline is so apparent and so awful, and they're going to have to do something soon, you suspect, about Jose Mourinho. However, that may overlook Liverpool completely. So I feel like we're going to get into Manchester United more in a moment. So give us your thoughts on Liverpool, because they seem to be humming now. It's their best start ever to a top-flight campaign, not a Premier League campaign, a top-flight campaign, which is an extraordinary thing. And from, well, 2-3 weeks ago when Van Dijk skied that ball against Everton to thinking we wouldn't even have a title race to now, yeah, it's all turned around. They are finding momentum and form, and it's all happening at just the right time for them, you feel?
It is, and the difference between this season and last season, they've got a little bit better depth of squad. You know, they can bring on Shaqiri, and they can make that big difference to them as well. We know that, you know, the defence looks super now. When did you ever used to say that about Liverpool? So all the bits that had to be fixed have kind of been fixed. And there's a bit of backup as well. I mean, Milner wasn't, you know, not involved, but he's a massive player as well. You can bring him in, he can do just about any job for you. So I would say up until just about this weekend, I'm pretty confident saying, like, no one's going to get near Man City. I really can't see it. After this weekend, I'm looking at it, and having been, I've watched Man City twice. I was at two Man City games in a week there. And if they can't get De Bruyne fully fit quite quickly, and, you know, Silva back quite quickly, you know, there might be the odd points dropped here and there. And, you know, I'm still absolutely with City in this, 100% with City in this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's beginning to think, you know what, but they have to, you say it's the best ever start. Well, it's going to have to keep on being that way because Man City at their very best still ain't going to drop many points.
No, they're still only 2 points clear of Man City with their best ever start. So, I mean, look, there's a whole host of areas to talk about with regard to this game. Mourinho mentioned Robertson, who he felt sprinted 100 metres every minute or 200 metres every minute. I feel like Robertson was getting faster. He was so eye-catching, some of those runs. Gary Neville on commentary was perplexed as to why nobody was even attempting to track him for much of the game, whereas they were tracking runners on Klein's side.
Sometimes it's hardly worth it because you can't keep up with it, I suppose. But it is extraordinary. His timing of the runs, it's not stupid runs either. He knows what he's doing with those runs. Also, the team you're playing with, they're dragging everybody else all over the place as well. So it's all very well chasing him. But you have to, you know, everybody else has to sort of bend round and curl round to make sure that they stop him as well. And it's that fact that it never seems to be, you know, below that extreme pace. I mean, you've got two people here, I think, that can talk about it as well as anyone. I spent a lot of time not wanting to chase that fullback, but having to, but trying to psych them out. And a lot of times the fullbacks, if you sacked them out as if to say, right, I'm not coming with you, they would hesitate. No hesitation ever from Robertson. Just never happens. That's the idea. You just go, you just go, you just go. And it's a horrible thing because as a winger, eventually you think, right, I've no choice. I need to keep on going. So you spend your whole time at right back and the battle is lost. He has won the battle. So it's a really tough one. Kev, you've done both sides of that, haven't you? Really? You know, and it's, You almost look into the eyes of the guy beside, or you can feel him and you think, he can't stay with me. It's a brilliant feeling. And he must have that every second of every game at the moment.
What was notable, I think, what's notable about you say with Robertson doing that, I was pretty much like what you would say, whether I played in the left-hand side midfield, it is, if you're playing with wing-backs like Liverpool did, or like Man United did yesterday, it's a bit of cat and mouse. We've spoken about it in relation to the Irish squad in recent times. You've got to almost play on the other side of him at times and take a bit of a chance and go, tell you what, I'm going to actually influence what you're doing. I'm going to try and get in the psyche of your head. I'll play the wrong side of you. I'll try and force you back towards your own goal. If he's gone, I might not necessarily be able to get back. But the thing is, if you do that, communication. And
Does that cat and mouse game boil down generally to whoever the fastest player is wins?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that I would have been the fastest player on the pitch, but I would have said that, and I Jen would have felt it, no one will outrun me. Nobody will outrun me over 90 minutes, continuously up and down, doing the similar sort of thing what Robertson was doing, up, back, no one would outrun me. That was maybe my mentality when I would have played. So if someone's going to do that against me and be able to continuously go up and down and beat me over that 90 minutes, yeah, fair play to them.
You'd have had your hands full of Robertson on this
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, I think without a doubt I would have done, without a doubt, definitely. And I think the problem being for United yesterday was that if Robertson went and Liverpool lost the ball, United had it for 2 or 3 seconds. They weren't able to maintain possession. And yeah, so they won it back and they were in position, Liverpool, to win it back quickly, circulate the ball, and then they were able to get back into positions. So that was the problem for United.
It was a curious feeling at half-time, Pat, in that Liverpool had utterly dominated, and then, you know, that great cliche that goals change games is a horrible cliche, but probably worth using yesterday because Lingard's goal did change the complexion of things. There was almost a bit of shell shock and United started getting on the ball, and there was this almost half sense at half-time. Could Mourinho actually sneak the most undeserved of 2-1 wins or 1-1 draws out of here? But Liverpool reset and charged them down in the second half, and really it was more of a 4-5-0 kind of game, wasn't it, in the end?
No, I agree with that perfectly. I mean, the thing is, I think it now comes down, we've watched it long enough now, to it's an ethic, it's an ideal. Right? We're talking about, I think Robertson's a great microcosm of it, right? So, Kev, you're saying there, Robertson goes, you play cat and mouse him. He's not interested in the mouse. He's just ignoring you. He's gone.
But key is, Pat, though, to that, I'm just saying, it is definitely, if he's going to play the wrong side of Dalot as yesterday, Dalot has got to be screaming at Darmian. Darmian has got to be made aware of that he is actually bombing on. So he's a natural right back. He's got to be filtering out, playing a little bit wider. And someone else, the problem with Liverpool is you've got players that's running out to win in Mane and Salah, so they're going to have to be a bit narrow as centre-halves. So Dalot simply has to stay with him. Across that game, that's your job, deal with him.
But here's a point. Mourinho's made 8 more changes than any other manager in the Premier League this season. This team's never played together.
Yeah.
And this is a consistent theme of Manchester United performances, Pat.
Yeah, Pat, I didn't want him to talk to you there. Sorry about that.
That's a good point. I like the discussion. I mean, I love... But to me, I think the whole thing is he's made all those changes. It's because he's not found the right thing that works within his ethos. And I think that's a problem. The whole idea is it's almost like this massive big piece of string in the pitch. So Robertson goes, everyone else curves round, right, to give him back cover while he goes. Mm. And that's fine. The centre midfielder goes and covers, and that's it. They all know it. I don't know if Mourinho's teams do that. I think they're much more static. I think everyone knows it's an old-fashioned job, right? You stay with your man, you go with him. If you don't go with him, everyone's static. I don't think there's that sort of static feel about Manchester City, about Liverpool. There is more movement, more mobility within the group to do that. Mm. And that's one of the areas where he's falling down now because the rest of it's malleable. The team you're playing against, it's almost like herding cats. You can't. Whereas with Mourinho's team, I know where they're all going to be. I can close my eyes and I can tell you roughly where everyone's going to be. You try doing that with Liverpool. You try doing that with Manchester City. You can't. And because his more structured methodology can't cope with that, he's looking more and more like yesterday's man. Mm. And it's purely because of things like Robertson looks a simple thing. But it's not Robertson. It's everybody else adapting to what the likes of Robertson's doing. And when he's not doing it, they'll go and do it on the other side. And it's a joy to watch. It really is. And you just wonder, is there any way Mourinho, he's not going to reinvent it. He's going to try and do what he does, but do it better. Is that good enough anymore?
Yeah, Pat, a couple of things I wanted to ask you about, maybe in relation to both midfields. First of all, you've seen a lot of Matic over the last few years. What's happened to him? What's going wrong with Matic at the moment?
Well, he's had ups and downs as well, even back in his Chelsea times as well. If he's got something, people around him, he can get close to players, and he hasn't got too far to cover. He's absolutely fine. He covers everything. He tackles well. But he can lose his head slightly. We can look at, if you think of someone like N'Golo Kante, it doesn't matter. He will kind of be everywhere. He's not got that type of engine. It's a wee bit more one-paced engine. So if you put him around, you know, 2 or 3 guys that all know exactly the job and they're all doing it right, he's fine. He's okay that way. But he's not doing it all the time. He had one fabulous season with Chelsea, but it wasn't all the time. You almost had to take him out and bring him back in. So when he sort of left Chelsea, I remember thinking, he might be just about the other side of his best now. And he'll have good games and he'll be able to do a job. But utterly controlling the negative defensive side of the game for any team at top level, that's about his limit. but can he do it every week? I kind of don't see
have
it.
Have we overstated his importance then, just in general, across the course of his Premier League career?
I suppose I look back at my times watching him through Chelsea and thinking, yeah, you're a really good cog in the wheel, you know. But if you're not playing, you get somebody else who can do it quite well. It wasn't a kind of, oh, my God, Hazard's not there or whatever. You know, it's not one of them. He was very, very good at what he did, but there's other people that can do it. But he needs to be part of a unit. And the thing you have to add on top of it, creativity, it's limited in comparison to a lot of other, well, dare I say, a Manchester United midfielder. That's the thing. That's the limitations.
It's clear we're in the end game here for Mourinho. What are the board waiting for is the really interesting question now.
Does it not come down to whether you jump before the 1st of January or not? Because you need to make a decision. They've made decisions before. They moved very early in Moyes. They've so used to this concept of having a guy there for decades. Hmm. You know, it's in weird territory they're in now. The cost of doing it is going to be astounding to get rid of
24 million sterling. Although we understand on fairly firm ground that if Manchester United are out of the Champions League, it will cost 7 million less. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how much 7 million is worth to them. Right now, I'd say for a lot of them, the drudgery of the next 2-3 months is worth a hell of a lot less than 7 million.
Yeah, if they were out of the Champions League, I think it would be a foregone conclusion that we'd probably been done by now. But he's got them that far, you know, and are they really hoping they can win the Champions League? You know, it's just not going to happen. So they're nowhere near good enough to do that sort of thing. But then Mourinho's taken teams in that competition further than sometimes they've deserved to in the past. So maybe they're kind of holding on to that. There's probably, I would guess, a long-term plan. They may well have half written off Champions League for next season, but already try to put in place and maybe planning it a little bit further ahead this time instead of panicking. So Mourinho does, you know, limp on until the end of the season. He goes and gets another job over in Spain, whatever. And then they've got time to go and put in place what they wanted, which is not only a new coach, but also a complete revamp of the squad. Because you try to do that halfway through the season, you're just patching it up again.
Yeah.
Man United have had a few years of patching up now. They could do without that. They need someone who can build something.
Yeah, and one of the really curious things, you know, Roy Keane was on Sky Sports yesterday, and his general contention was Mourinho, no Mourinho, whichever way you want to cut it. Most of the players there aren't good enough to play for Manchester United, was his opinion. Now, I don't know how true that is because we're seeing them in such a terrible environment, you know, but potentially here we're looking at a number of years. If Roy Keane is right, we're looking here at maybe half a decade, if not a decade, before they win a league again.
It does seem an awful long way away, and I think we all agree with that. I mean, the classic one is what you all do is how many team of those players would you take if you were Man City? How many of those players would you take if you were Liverpool? You know, and not at their best, but how they're playing just now. And there's very, very few of them just now you take. So you have to start looking around the planet. And the going rate at the moment to get a top-class player, particularly if you're Manchester United in crisis and you're having to pay a premium on it as well, it's astronomical. So when you talk about Mourinho leaving, I'm not talking about Mourinho leaving and paying him. I'm talking about everything else.
Okay.
Whereas he's probably thinking to himself, I can maybe do it with another centre-back here, maybe one more guy here. I can't. For the life of me, it's very difficult to see Mourinho rebuilding an entire thing from where he is just now, in his image, with players that he wants, that will then be as successful at Manchester United need. I just can't see how it will work. I mean, he's done it before, but it's hard to see it.
One last point. I think it's a bit rich when those of us who, I'm talking about me here as opposed to you two, it's a bit rich when journalists and people onlooking can say, like, oh, the game has passed Mourinho by. You know, such a dismissive thing. You know, Mourinho's forgotten more about the game than I will ever know. Yeah. And yet I feel it's right to say that, you know, that the game has passed him by. But it, like, as if somehow I understand the game more than Mourinho. I'm sure it's something you've thought about. How does the game pass someone by who's been at the cutting edge for so long, who is so intelligent, who is surrounded by it, immersed in it? How has the game passed him by?
Well, I personally think there's a big thing. A big thing is to ignore what happened with Wenger and ignore what happened with Alex Ferguson. They are weird outliers and they are not normal, right? So everybody else, look at every other manager just about, and a lot of players as well, styles change quickly. Yeah, systems change quickly. I can remember the time I played in the just as the Premier League was starting. I thought the Premier League style had changed massively in 2 or 3 years. You know, it became a much more power-based, pace-based game. And I wasn't a fan of it, but hey, that's the way it was going. And then a few years later on, it completely changed again. Certain things had changed. I think the change you've had in the last few years with Pep Guardiola, with Jurgen Klopp, and the styles that they've brought in, you stick Chelsea on that as well. I think it's a step change that of a level I've not seen in maybe a 10-year period, and it's happened in 2 or 3 years. So saying that he's yesterday's man, that's kind of normal. Things move on, styles move on. What is the thing that is successful moves on in football. It always has. It is a kind of a battle. Like, it's almost like a battle against a virus that changes all the time. And if you're not willing to change, and by the way, that's the same for some players who have adapted and changed as you go along. If you stay the same all the time, I can remember working, classic example, Kev, you played for Everton as well. I came to Everton and they were a fabulous team, so well organised, and had a set system. And then they stuck with it. And then another manager came in, and then the old manager heard Kendall come back, and he kept on with the same system. And I'm thinking, that's 5 years old. That's gone. That's moved on a little bit. And from within the game, I thought, can't believe you're still trying to do that and be successful. You can do that and survive, you know, in certain ways. But to be really successful, no, you need to be at the cutting edge.
Okay. And in short, do you feel like the last 2-3 years has been a bit of a quantum leap?
Yes and no. A quantum leap, if you mean yes, a massive jump, quantum means small, doesn't it? Really? It's one of those phrases that doesn't make any sense.
So I've been misusing the phrase quantum leap for years. No, oh, no, my God.
Joe, honestly, dude, come on. Honest to God, I swear to you. Seriously.
That is a blow.
Seriously.
I don't know how many times I said quantum leap.
Honestly. But everybody says it just doesn't make sense, that's all. Quantum's been there. So, but you're right, it's a massive jump forward. I always use the word an exponential jump forward or increasing things. And I think it has in the last wee while been like that. And by the way, it will change again. But at the moment, where it's gone, and just look at it. Four Champions League sides for English teams, one of them being Man United, fortunately for them. But the other three, they're going forward. And maybe the last line to add on it, which is a real painful one for Mourinho. I think Man City are getting better. They're a better team than they were last year. Liverpool are a better team than they were last year. Arsenal are a better team than they were last year. Chelsea are a better team than they are last year. And then you look at United and you think, oh my God, it's getting... And that's when you see passing you by, that kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
It does a bit. Clock's against us. We have to take a quantum ad break. Pat and Evan, thank you very much. We're back.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern-day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Kevin Coban, Football Show is here. Exciting. Great to have you with us, big guy. This is the Off the Ball studio. Do you remember it?
That sounds so insincere that, honest to God, it does.
I mean it.
Yeah, good one. Honest to God.
This is the show. This is where we did the show from, actually, where you're generally talking to us now with your dog jumping all over the Skype.
That was Saturday. That was Murphy, of course. Yeah, Nathan. What am I going to do? I'm not going to put him outside, am I? That's
lock him in the bathroom or something.
Yeah, what do you do? Like put him in I don't know, put him down in the cellar or something like that.
I wouldn't put him down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fairness. So you were in Anfield yesterday. Let's talk, Kev. Liverpool 3, Manchester United 1.
Yeah.
36 shots, Liverpool. 13 corners to 2. Fabinho, who you gave man of the match to, by the way. He made 28 forward passes. Only 2 went backwards in the whole game.
That was a very interesting one, that stat from a midfield, holding midfielder. How often do you see that? Back to the goalkeeper, back to the centre-halves. He was outstanding yesterday. I was questioning before the game too.
Yeah, it's true. This was a complete obliteration, really, of Manchester United. There were shots in the crowd of Ed Woodward covering his mouth and talking to Bobby Charlton.
Yeah.
And shaking his head, basically, Woodward. And Bobby Charlton just said, yeah. Whatever Woodward had said, which I'm suspecting was not good, Charlton said, yeah. And then there was a shot of Ferguson and David Gill. What would they give to have the two lads back?
I know.
And Ferguson gave a very slow shake of the head at one point.
It was the manner in which, you can imagine Alex Ferguson getting wound up watching it just with the lack of a little bit of fight. That's what you would say. There's no fight in the game. Sometimes you go, we've all played in games where and you've come off and you're off it. You know, you're not able to get near anybody. But United are doing it too regularly. Because the game plan is to drop off. We know that now. We know what the game plan is from United. So
they did try and press Arsenal a little bit last week, actually.
Yeah, they did. They changed the system. They went to the back three that they played yesterday. And they tried to implement some pressing. And he brought a bit of energy into the side with Lingard and Rashford. And who else was in that night as well? Martial, I think, played that night, didn't he? But they lacked everything, Joe, yesterday. They had absolutely nothing in midfield. The midfield three of, well, two of Herrera and Matic, dreadful. I mean, dreadful, awful.
It's not a midfield that would scare lots of teams, is it?
Not now. I mean, you would have said Matic over the last 10 years has been one of the most consistent midfield performers, hasn't he? And he even did well last year for United.
But he's way off now.
I wouldn't want to say he's gone, but he looks like an average Premier League footballer now. Any half-decent midfield player could sit in front of the back four and do exactly what he's doing. That's the way that I would view it anyway.
They're 19 points behind Liverpool. They're 11 points off the Champions League spot. So when you're at the game and you're watching, what's the body language like if the players, say when the ball goes out of play or breaks in play, are they on to each other? Are they looking around saying, what's going on here? Or is it almost a heads down type of thing?
Yeah, well, I think Nathan mentioned it yesterday in commentary once or twice, body language in relation to a bad pass being made, turning the backs on teammates, waving the hands in the air. The one who was probably as bad as anyone yesterday thought was Victor Lindelof. And I'm going, mate, you're having a nightmare.
You don't have the right to be.
You
like
are
that.
Having a nightmare. Get your if I'm on being because it used to wind me up when I was playing, and lads that used to do that. I've had teammates that would have done that in the past. Look after yourself here. We're having a bad time. Wave your hand around. Signal so the supporters are seeing that I'm trying here. I'm doing my best, and I'd dig them out for that. I would be digging them out in the changing room, even on the pitch. You get your hand down, mate. Don't wave your hand at me. Do your own job. Concentrate on yourself, and then we'll actually come together afterwards. But Victor Lindelof was doing that on a couple of occasions yesterday, waving his arms around when he didn't have a couple of passes. And I'm thinking, mate, you've been caught out six or seven times defensively. You look so poor at the back. You look so poor on the ball. You're getting caught out by trying to take too many touches on the ball. That was maybe the theme of what I said. How many times I said that to yesterday pre-match, taking too many touches on the ball. Whereas Liverpool were moving it quickly yesterday. They don't necessarily have a midfield players, certainly the two that's ahead of Fabinho, that's going to seriously go and damage you with the passing ability. But they were moving it quickly. Get it, give it, run off the ball. And that's how they did it. United. Herrera worked hard. He ran round. No quality. And zero quality. Matic, zero quality. Dalot, the fullback, wingback, dreadful. Absolutely
really
dreadful.
Really dreadful, yeah.
Dreadful.
Because there was a bit of promise about him, and he had a game where he put in some nice crosses, and there was a hope that he might do something for them.
Just had no influence on the game. Yeah. When you're playing that style of football, that system, you've got to have an influence going forward, and he had no influence on
He's
the game.
He's gone after 45 minutes, I suppose, is the other thing.
He could have been injured. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's hear from Jose Mourinho then. Yeah. Interesting to see what his mood was like afterwards, what his thoughts on the game were. This was Mourinho in his press conference.
First of all, we have lots of problems related with physicality. We have lots of players that I could consider injury prone, because some of our players, they are always injured, and is not
who's that?
Is not with me.
Who's always injured?
Was before me. Was if you look to the stats with Mr. Van Gaal and before Mr. Van Gaal with David, if you look to that period, we have players that are permanently injured. When you are permanently injured, physicality is very difficult to get. Then there are qualities that a player has or doesn't have. You cannot improve, you cannot make them have. I give you an example. Robertson, Mane, Salah, Wijnaldum, Keita, Fabinho, they are physical players. In the top of that, they are good players technically. I also have lots of good players technically, but we don't have many players with that intensity, with that physicality. So when the game has high levels of intensity, it's difficult for us. Our first 20 minutes was difficult for us. Then, when we had the ball, when the tension went down, when the intensity went down, was easier for us to be in the game. We managed to have the ball and to bring the game into, I would say, our side, in the sense of now we are playing the way we can. And these are our qualities. And I think you like to say sometimes that is the manager's choice. You can compare my Porto team with Liverpool. You can compare. Because the qualities of the players are there. Was my best team in defensive transition. We lose the ball, we bite like mad dogs, and we recover the ball after 2 seconds. In Real Madrid, I had my best team in direct counterattack. Because I had young Di Maria, young Ronaldo, young Higuain, and young Benzema. We killed everybody in offensive transition. And in Inter, I had my best team in a defensive low block, where people like Materazzi, Samuel, Lucio, Cordoba, in a low block, you can be there 5 hours and you don't concede a goal. So players make teams play in a certain way.
Okay, guys, thank you.
No, because I'm happy with Matic, Lingard, and Herrera.
So what happened there at the end, if you're listening on the radio, is Mourinho stood up and someone asked him about Pogba and he half answered as he's leaving the press conference. You know, the interesting thing, so he's talking about how basically I don't have the players.
Yeah.
And this team actually has no strength. And you go through the Inter team, they could play a certain way, they had certain strengths. Porto had certain strengths, Real Madrid had certain strengths. He's basically saying this team really don't have a defining quality.
Yeah.
So Mourinho's been there 3 years now, plus he has spent $400 million alone.
Yeah, look at the players that he signed within that starting 11 yesterday, Joe, as well. So he's got Lukaku, Matic, Dalot, Lindelof, Bailly. All these players are signed by him. Mm. So five, six players there that I've named that he has signed. If he wants to play that way, then he's got to coach his team to play that way with the signings that he's made. It's easy for a new signing to walk into a club, listen to what the manager's saying, take on board all his ideas, and then go and implement that on the pitch on the Saturday. He's talking about intensity there, which has been the buzzword over the last 10 or 15 years. I've used it, we've all used it, even when you're playing, let's get the intensity right at the start of the game. Mourinho doesn't play like that. He's never started a game like that. There's been a couple of occasions this season where you and I, when we've even sat in studio at times, and even after being commentating, we speak about it, United have started well, first 5 minutes, and then that's it. Mm. It's almost like you've got a 5 minute spell out of them, and that's it. So his teams don't play with intensity, so why bring that up? Why bring up the players, the personnel, when he's signed a lot of these players, and the wages that United are paying, he can't throw around this argument that they've not got the spending power of City and Liverpool because they spent as much.
Yeah,
it's a lot of what he says is seriously flawed, but it's self-preservation. That's all he's trying to do.
It's funny, he mentioned Robertson, Mane, Salah, Wijnaldum, Keita and Fabinho, these physical players that I just don't have. What's really interesting is you leave out Mane, they've all moved to Anfield in the 2.5 years that he's been at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Like the recruitment there is fairly awful. It is a legacy issue, the recruitment at Manchester United. I mean, Alex Ferguson did things in an old school way. His brother Martin did a lot of scouting for him.
Yeah.
There wasn't an infrastructure in place to compare with other teams. Yeah. So they have been trying to catch up in that respect. However, the players he signed just haven't worked. When you compare the quality that Liverpool have signed, like Van Dijk, why not? Like, there was nothing stopping Mourinho to go out and get Van Dijk, another Premier League footballer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we're all led to believe, I think it is true that he had once he'd spoken to Klopp, that was it.
Yeah.
Mind made up, I'm going to Liverpool.
He's a Liverpool fan.
City offered more money, Chelsea offered more money, but no, I'm going to Liverpool. So fair enough, it's a different one, but I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
United could go and buy him. Clearly, he's the best centre-half in the Premier League when he was at Southampton. We were all saying that. That's why all those big clubs are in for him.
Yeah.
But he's brought Eric Bailly in, he's brought Victor Lindelof in, and Victor Lindelof has done okay in a couple of games this season.
Yeah.
I'd say ish, I'm probably you. He's not been great, he's been okay.
And he's done okay because it was so bad at first that now when
that's
he's not terrible,
point.
We're like, oh, maybe it's not a disaster.
And I'm totally with you on that. I think it's because he was that bad defensively, his position was, he was all over the place positionally.
Yeah.
So that was why he's actually done half decent in a couple of games. It makes him look half decent. But what did they pay for him, 40 million quid?
50.
50 million? I mean, Joe. 50 million.
Your good friend Roy Keane was in Sky Sports yesterday and he was saying, okay, there's the Mourinho issue, but actually he was just saying, I'm not even going to be too critical of the players because they're just not good enough.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this thing has just gone beyond all blame almost. The players actually aren't good enough, and then there's Mourinho, as we've discussed.
I think, yeah, not good enough. It's still going to come back. I think you'd mentioned before the game yesterday, is whatever, yes, he's clearly got a problem with Pogba. The relationship's fractured. It's gone. So we know that. But Graeme Souness has said after the game, he said, Pogba must be thinking, surely I'm better than Fellaini. Surely I'm better than Matic. And he's saying, if he had the attitude, the right attitude, he is as good as any midfield player in the Premier League. I think we know that. We know he's got that ability.
So did he have the right attitude for France in the World Cup?
Yeah, I heard you talking, was it Kenny I think you were talking to about this? I listened to one of the podcasts about it. And yes, I would probably say he did, because he clearly had raised his levels. He had the trust of the manager. I think Mourinho had spoken about the summertime. He'd been banned from social media. I don't think that does have an effect. Personally, I don't think that. It's the way that it is. It's the modern game.
Mourinho said he had no time to be distracted during the World Cup. But yeah. I would think there's plenty of time. You're sitting around the hotel the whole
100%,
time. You can get up to no good.
He was meaning social media, because there was a ban on the squad, wasn't there? There was a ban on the French squad. I think Deschamps had put a ban on the squad from using Twitter or Instagram or whatever it was. So. Yeah, I don't think that's an issue. Even if he was using it, it's him. That's just his personality. Mm. It's about getting the best out of him. But whatever's happened between the two of them, personally, I think it's down to the agents, because he seems to have fallen out with Lukaku when him and Lukaku last season were best buds, weren't they? They were best mates. Nothing could seem to break that relationship.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden now, they've both got the same agent. He's fallen out with Pogba. Now he's fallen out with Lukaku. That relationship seems broken as well. So there are so many issues around United, though. Even from what Neville said, you've seen Liverpool are streets ahead. Not one of the United midfielders can pass a ball.
Yeah.
You don't see them putting four or five passes together, even just passing for passing sake, like you see teams do, and you think they're not going anywhere. But United just don't do it.
Yeah, they couldn't keep the ball against Valencia midweek either. There was one point Neville kept making in commentary as well. I was watching bits of Sky Sports and listening to yourself and Nathan, and Mourinho mentioned Robertson making these 100-yard sprints every time, and he said, I'm tired just looking at Robertson. Robertson was amazing, clearly. Yeah. But Neville was saying that it was Lingard, or was it Rashford or Lingard that was on the right of Gubb? It was more Rashford, I think.
Rashford was on the left.
Okay.
Rashford's on the left, yeah.
Well, he was making the point that Rashford was tracking Klein on the left-hand side, but that Lingard wasn't going with Robertson. And Neville's point was, it's as if United have surrendered the right-hand side to Robertson.
Yeah.
It's as if Lingard has been told not to track him.
Yeah.
Now, fair enough if Lingard just couldn't keep pace with the relentless running of Robertson and maybe was 5-10 yards behind him, but actually he was standing there and Robertson was going on these mad runs. And Neville couldn't work out actually what was the plan for United's right-hand side.
Yeah. I think I'd said it in commentary myself as well. There was little or no attacks coming down United's right-hand side. As I mentioned, Dalot, he wasn't involved in the game. I personally don't think, I've never rated Darmian. Even when I saw him play for Italy before he'd signed for United, I thought he's never a Man United player.
Yeah.
Talking about him being the next Dennis Irwin or whatever, it was just nonsense. But
so what was their plan for Robertson?
But there was nothing. Robertson was their outball for United. So United's attack was trying to get down the left-hand side, which, again, I think it was trying to get Rashford into the game. He didn't play well.
Yeah.
The outball then was Robertson all the time. Every time Liverpool won the ball back, quick transition, get it out to Robertson. And Robertson was finding positions that was, it was in between Darmian, it was in between Dalot, and Lingard was a little bit ahead of them. Between the three of them, they never had it. There seemed to be no communication.
So explain to me why the ultra-conservative Mourinho was not saying to Lingard, do not be ahead of Robertson, you need to start tracking him.
100%.
So why did that not happen?
Well, or if the communication would have been before the game that you can pass him on.
But, okay, gamble.
But it's not so much gamble, but it's almost as if you're tracking back so far and you go, right, well, I don't necessarily need to be going back into the right-back position because we've got five across the back as it already is when we're in defensive situations. Mm. Pass him on. But it seemed that, there probably was some sort of communication, I don't know, but there was no understanding. There was no understanding on how they're going to be able to pick up that left-hand side where Keita was finding little bits of space for himself. Salah or Firmino or even Mane, they were pulling out into that channel. So between the four or five Liverpool midfield and defender in Andy Robertson as well, they were finding themselves free. They always had an overload down Liverpool's left-hand side. Yeah. And United couldn't deal with it between the... Maybe I personally think it's probably the system that didn't necessarily suit the personnel that were playing yesterday.
Well, you see, the other thing is they don't even have a chance to get used to any system. Mourinho's made 53 changes to his starting lineup in the Premier League this season. That's 8 more than any other team.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
And that's not Mourinho, is it, Joe? How many times did we see Mourinho at his best at Chelsea? And he spoke there about Inter Milan, and he spoke there about Porto. I remember Porto's team 1-11, you knew the side, Inter Milan, apart from a couple of changes maybe up front, but back four, midfield two, yeah. three, however he was playing, you knew who was playing. Same with Chelsea.
Yeah.
He might play Willian instead of whoever. He might play but you knew who was playing. Essentially, it was 13 players he was going to pick from when you get to a game. United, it just seems like it's just throw a lot of balls up and then let's see where they land.
It's a mishmash. So the board are obviously coming under scrutiny as well. Gary Neville has led that charge for some time. He's been looking towards the board. You wonder if Neville's interested in a position there.
100%, isn't he?
Do you think so?
It looks to me, doesn't it? It looks like that's the way he's angling, isn't he?
It does a bit.
He sees his future in an administration role. Doesn't necessarily want to go back into coaching.
Yeah.
Doesn't want day-to-day management style. Doesn't want that. That's where he sees his future. And
I suspect he'd be good at it too, actually.
I think he probably would. But again, when your head's on the block, it's a different. United are way behind. If he took that job now, I can't see United winning the league in the next 4 or 5 years unless they go out and get a Pochettino or whoever it's going to be that's going to go into the place and change it. He was speaking yesterday, Gary Neville. It's almost like now you've got to hit the reset button and you're starting from scratch and you think, right, you're sacrificing 2 years here now. Liverpool have gone through such a barren spell. United are Liverpool 20 years ago.
It feels like that,
doesn't it? That's exactly how they are.
It's remarkable how history repeats sometimes. So he was on Roy Keane yesterday. Did you see much of Roy yesterday?
Bits, a little bit pre-match, and I saw a little bit post-match.
It's funny with Roy.
I saw the Twitter pieces, the Twitter clips they were putting out.
In all
the
times Roy's been doing analysis, he's never once broken down a game tactically or pointed something out that you haven't seen. His delivery is just so compelling, you watch it. But if you're to read what he's saying, it's things like they're an average team, the players aren't good enough. Stuff that anyone could throw out there.
Yeah.
But when he's got the beard and the eyes.
No one says it better.
And the constant threat of anything could kick off here. It's just got a little something, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a novelty value as well, I suppose. But Neville and Keane were talking about the theme that you're talking about, which is a reset button, Woodward, the board, Mourinho's future. Here's a clip of Neville and Keane yesterday on Sky.
Yeah, I think it'll happen, whether it happens during the season, I think that my preference always would be to try and get to the end of a season. I think, to be honest with you, the boardroom is so naive. It's unbelievable.
But on the manager...
Can you let me finish? It's so naive. To give him an extended contract, knowing the cycle of Mourinho with three years, the third year is always the difficult year for him. So, 18 months in, he's second in the league, he's won two trophies in his first season, the players are happy with him. At that point is the point to hold your nerve and keep him hungry in that third season. The minute he came back from pre-season, he was at it, and the club lost control. And there isn't that experience or that knowledge in the football club above him to be able to manage him and control him and handle him. And his agent's out last week, he goes into press conferences, they're not sure what he's going to say next, and they don't know what to do with him.
Is there any benefit from keeping him there?
Well, the problem they'll have now is that it'll cost an absolute fortune to lose him. When you lose a manager during the season, you've always then got the situation of who comes in. Are they going to get the manager that they want for the next 3-4 years at the football club? It's not just as easy as saying, well, let's get rid of the manager. Because Manchester United need to reset. And it's not just the manager. It's deeper than that, you know what I mean? Well, Manchester United, you've got to get a grip of your football club.
Gary, you speak about Manchester United and leadership from the top, but then on the other hand, we criticise whoever is the board, whoever, because they don't back him with the centre-back. What is the leadership when you actually make the decision?
Absolutely, you make a decision and you back him by giving him the centre-backs he wants, but then they pulled out on him. They withdrew. They gave him the contract, then withdrew on the signings.
So what would be
a mess?
That's why he's frustrated. They didn't back him. I think that the easiest thing is to say, look at the manager, and because I've done a little bit of it, the manager seems to want to suffer. Get him out the door. His CV warrants... But it'll be another year. It certainly won't do anything, I think, during the course of the season. But I would say, Mourinho, they thought, well, Pep Guardiola would have been a brilliant manager, a genius. Klopp here. I think Pep Guardiola, in his first season at Man City, won nothing. Went to the board and said, I need four defenders. He didn't go, I need one. He went four, and they backed him. No, he might have asked for other players, but they backed him. Klopp, over the last few years, we've been watching Liverpool go, yeah, they're not bad, but they're desperate for a goalkeeper, they're desperate for centre-half, and they wouldn't have got it. And all of a sudden, now we're all sitting there going, Liverpool are going places, still to win a trophy. And I think Mourinho now is in that position where he went, listen, OK, you can talk about players who've come and it's not worked out, but it doesn't mean to say you make a bad situation worse by persevering with these lads. Man United bought players before when we were there, or Alex Ferguson was there, and it's not worked out. You move them on. That's the name of the game. We're talking here about how many points behind Liverpool and Man City, that's going to get bigger. That's That's not Man United's problem. The problem is get back to being a really good team and winning football matches and having a solid foundation.
Duncan Castles reckons that they'll have to pay Mourinho $24 million,
yeah,
or else Mourinho and his backroom team, but it'll cost them $24 million to sack him. Though there is an understanding as well, Off the Ball has an article on this. They understand that they could save as much as $7 million. There's an interesting clause in Mourinho's contract with regard to their European status.
Again, that's obviously something that you extra $7 million if to Mourinho if they're still in the Champions League when they sack him. All these sort of things that.
So if he's
about,
knocked out in their PSG encounter the day after the PSG second leg, if they're out of Europe and they sack him, it's $7 million cheaper.
Yeah, personally to him. Yeah. Okay. Again, to a club.
What's $7 million to United?
Exactly. If they want to sack him, they sack him. It does seem that. The whole thing, I was saying before, the relationship between players and manager board, it's all fractured. Everything seems wrong. It does all seem wrong. $7 million to United now is a huge sum of money to probably to Mourinho personally. Of course it would be.
I wonder, is there some sense of them having completely fallen out with Mourinho and not wanting to give him the satisfaction?
Wanting to shaft him well and truly.
Yeah.
Well, you could see it, couldn't you?
They'll be waiting until the 13th of March then to sack him.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's a long, long, long time away, considering how much drudgery the last few months have been.
Well, exactly, and what will it cost them if they don't qualify? Mm. You know, what they now, I think they're 11 points, is that right? They're 11 points off fourth place now. It looks unlikely they're going to qualify for next season's Champions League, because they're not going to win it, are they? Let's be frank, I can't see them winning it. How they've performed in the Champions League, I just can't see it. I'm not saying they won't, but I can't see them doing it. Off the back of that, top four this season doesn't look realistic to me. All the sides above them are playing better than them. They're playing a better brand of football. United look way off it. So they've got a good run of fixtures where they could quite conceivably win the next four games. Yeah. But I don't think that's going to happen. What is the point in Man United delaying the inevitable? What is the point now? There's no logic. Just cut your ties. Pay the $7 million, or pay the $24 million, whatever it's going to be, and it's a vast sum of money. Don't we? You say that.
It's not really. I wonder if the issue is they don't know who to replace him with.
Yeah.
Who's the obvious choice? And if this board is naive, as Neville says.
Yeah.
Who's the obvious choice to replace Mourinho?
I don't think, unless Zidane, who's been spoken about as well, unless he brings in a super coach, someone that's dramatically going to change that style, and then you throw in his motivational little bits and bobs. Zidane never struck me as that hands-on manager or hands-on coach like a Guardiola, like a Klopp, like a Pochettino, whoever one of these coaches continues out in the training ground, drilling into the players' minds little patterns of play, little passages. I don't think he's that type. No. I don't think he is. So if he goes into United, then he's going to have to bring a hell of a coach with him, which he may well do. That could be the dream ticket for United. A Pochettino would be appealing to United. That's been muted a lot, that United fancy him, but Real Madrid fancy him. Where would he fancy it if he were to leave Spurs? And that, again, is doing a bit of an injustice to Spurs, given the position that they're in. They're in a stronger position than United now, aren't they? So it's probably going to be another season of Spurs qualify for the Champions League, so why would he walk away from that?
So who's third in line?
Who else is available? You've got Conte. I can't see Conte. Is Conte going to go into United and upset all the players? He'll upset them probably more than Mourinho. Mm. He could probably get a little bit more out of them tactically, I suppose. He might get a bounce from them straight away, but I don't see him being the answer. A Pochettino, if he were ever to come available, yes, I could see him.
So that's not going to happen.
I don't see it happening.
So if you're the board at Manchester United,
so you're saying,
that is your
problem. Let's just stick with him.
Maybe he'll turn it around, or maybe we just have to wait until we.
But even have even a better that even that comment, that little throwaway comment at the end when he was asked about Pogba, no, I'm quite happy with Herrera, Matic, and Lingard, whoever. What is the point? He's your star, regardless of anything, he's your star player. Mm. He's a star player, he's the world-renowned player. If he can't get in that United side, there's something seriously wrong, given how they pass, given how they play.
Well, I hate to break it to you, Kev, there is something seriously wrong.
Well, I know, yeah, exactly.
So we should touch on Liverpool then. Jurgen Klopp, this is him in the press conference, obviously much, much happier than Jose Mourinho.
Brilliant start, was one of the best performances we had since I'm in Liverpool. To be honest, not only the season, just the first half an hour was outstanding. Outstanding. How we played was just perfect. We tried to pass, we had in the right areas, we accelerated, we won the balls back, we played in behind the line, stuff like that, and it was just good. You need a bit of luck, what we need, both goals, deflected, stuff like that. But being in the situations, having these moments, that's just, that was football. Eh? And the first goal, that was a, what a goal. What a goal. It was brilliant, exactly like you have to do it. Fantastic pass, super control, fantastic finish. So that's how it should be. So, nearly perfect night for us.
Pretty much sums it up.
Do you know what? I think it's difficult. Liverpool fans have probably been screaming at us. We spoke about Man United and the negative aspect of it. I think we spoke about it before you coming on. You're thinking, like, where do we go first? But the story of yesterday was about Man United and the demise of the club and where it's going to. Oh, yeah. So it had to be. But
Liverpool still good is not as pressing an issue.
Yeah,
they are. Everything about them is just rolling very nicely at the moment.
And I mean, you and I, when we were speaking pre-match yesterday, we were talking about the fact is we fancy Liverpool. Mm. Liverpool, if they play half as well as they're capable of playing, they're going to win the game.
They should have won 5-0.
Yeah.
Yesterday was a 5-0 game.
Yeah.
So Fabinho, you gave man of the match to 28 passes forward, only two went back. He's growing into that role in a big way.
Yeah, I haven't been that impressed with him in the first few games that I saw him, because I felt, as I said yesterday, just a little bit lethargic on the ball, probably wanted an extra touch on the ball, wasn't able to get up to speed.
That is the pace of the Premier League in some respects.
Yeah, but he was good last week. I was at Bournemouth last week, right. And it was at Bournemouth, they played a little bit more of a pressing game than United. At home, you expect them to be a little bit more high tempo. But they weren't the Bournemouth that I've seen over the last couple of years, where they're seriously going high tempo. Yeah. But he looked good. He looked very good. The way he moved the ball, he looked like he's starting to grow into the role that he's asked to play now at Liverpool. And yesterday, I said it, I think it was way beyond his best performance. He was superb. From the start of the game, he was the one that set the tempo for Liverpool, with putting his foot in, breaking play up, setting traps in pressing people ahead of him. Then he was the one that would win the ball after United maybe got one or two passes around them.
Yeah.
And then it was his distribution on the ball, as you say there. And I didn't know that until you'd said it. Two passes backwards. Mm. That says it all from that position. That it's an easy one to go backwards and sideways. And I've seen it constantly. If you flip it the other side of Matic, poor season, backwards, sideways a lot this season. Whereas him, Fabinho, stepping into midfield, playing forward, the ball for Mane was sensational. Oh, it was a great ball, wasn't
so
it?
So the trajectory of it was just perfect.
It was.
Just so good. I remember a couple of years ago going to see Manchester United against Villarreal. I think it was about 2005. And Rio Ferdinand was coming into his peak.
Yeah.
And at the ground, his presence hung over the whole game. Like, there was just something emanating from him. He was able to nip in and pick balls. He won every header. Anytime a ball went within his vicinity, he was just in charge. Balls in behind, he was beating the forwards for pace. It was just like commanding.
Yeah.
And that comes through actually with Van Dijk through the television. Oh. So I can only imagine when you're watching him that there's that same sense of complete control over the whole game.
Do you know, he's going to make a mistake. He's going to make a mistake being probably a little bit too lethargic. That's going to happen with him, and you can maybe accept it. But you're watching him, and he has that way about him, and you'll know, anyone that's watched so much football over the years, you know, when it looks as though he has that extra second to just to take everything on board, view where the opposition player is or the direct opponent that he's up against, where the ball's going to go, and he reads it. Everywhere the ball is, he knows where it's going to go. That's where it seems when he's playing. Positional sense is incredible. His pace is something that you don't necessarily see. He is rapid. He's like Ferdinand. He is. I'd probably say he's better than Ferdinand. I do. I think he's got a better passing range than Ferdinand.
Yeah.
That is a thing. Probably as good in the air, I would say, as Ferdinand. I think physically as good as Ferdinand, as quick as Ferdinand. I think he's got a better passing range than Ferdinand.
There was a moment in the first half where him and Alisson got quite close together, and there was a fear, you know, they were kind of, and Van Dijk was being pressed, and he just calmed it all down very quickly, and it was a good pass. Like, Phil Jones would have scored an OG.
I don't know what, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Phil Jones would have chipped the keeper.
I heard you and Kenny arguing about it last week. Totally Phil Jones's fault.
Totally, 100% Phil Jones.
Kenny's a centre-half, and I understand what he's saying there. He does not need to go to ground, because what Phil Jones did last week, if anyone's seen that goal, the on goal he scored against Valencia, he has Batshuayi on the wrong side of him. So he knows that Batshuayi is on his left-hand side. He does not need to go to ground.
Yeah.
All he needs to do is just stop the run, push himself back into Batshuayi, the ball runs back through to Romeo in goal.
Kev, Talk to Kenny, not me.
Yeah, I will.
Preaching to the choir, my
friend. Totally with you.
Last one I wanted to ask you.
But that's what Van Dijk would have done. Dijk would have done that.
Just phenomenal. Before we go to an ad break then, you saw the Liverpool's front three in person. There's been so much talk about them. Yeah. So what was your read on them?
Salah through the middle, underrated, Joe, with his back to goal. Totally underrated, Salah with his back to goal. I think I saw him down at Bournemouth last week again, and again he scored a hat-trick in that game. I saw him I can't remember the game before that anyway, but I don't think he scored in the game, but Joe, his link-up play is brilliant. He backs in, he's so strong, you can't get the ball off him. He's got that little way about him. If the ball's played in with a bit of pace as well, he can roll defenders, so great playing as a number nine. Firmino, was excellent. I thought in yesterday, just his work rate, winning the ball back, nicking the ball from the wrong side of Matic and Herrera, great.
He didn't look as
but
tired.
But Mane, looking back to his best as well. So the front three were in full flow yesterday, yeah.
Okay. Champions League draw, mate, today. We'll talk about that next. Yeah.
Some of the boys are really obsessed with me, and some of them, they will wake up in the morning. As always, the first thing they think that comes to their mind is Jose Mourinho. I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one. And I'm sorry, I'm a bit arrogant. We have a top manager. Until the moment they have a manager that wins four Premier Leagues for them, I'm the number one. Because when I left the club last season, I left the club in the Champions League, winning the Champions League group, qualifying to the Champions League knockout phase, playing the second leg at home, with the advantage to be the champion of the group. So if they win the Champions League last year, they could be playing in Europe this season. So it's not my fault, it's the fault that the ones that stay here and didn't win the Champions League.
3-0. Do you know what this means? 3-0. But also means 3 premierships, and I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect, man.
OK, Kev, Champions League draw, let's do this quickly. Schalke versus City.
Yeah, City.
Atletico versus Juventus.
Great game.
This is the hipster choice.
Two best defences in European football, I would say. Ronaldo could be the X factor in this. I'd go Juve. I'd love to have seen one of these two sides go all the way, but I just fancy Juve. Juve got the edge in this one, I think.
Manchester United against PSG. The David Beckham derby.
PSG got too much.
Comfortably. Spurs against Borussia Dortmund is an interesting one, Ken.
Yeah, it is. You see your man Jadon Sancho at the weekend.
Yeah, he is good.
I'd like to get Lee Carsey on, actually, just to chat around Sancho. He would have had him in his youth team at City. It'd be a good one to chat around him, particularly around this game. Spurs beat them last year, looked too strong for them. Top of the Bundesliga, how strong is that at the moment? I don't know.
Well, you're supposed to know, you're a pundit.
No, I'm saying how strong is the league in general? They did well getting out. I'm not so sure, no. Bayern are not the side that they were. I heard Graeme Souness talk.
Skipping ahead here, Spurs against Dortmund.
No, what I'm saying here, he all fancies Bayern to go quite, I don't fancy Bayern at all.
I'll get to Bayern in a minute.
No, but my point being is, Dortmund are top of that league and they're 9 points ahead of them.
Yeah.
I don't fancy them. So, do you know what? I'll go with Spurs.
Right, I don't know how we got there, but we got there.
Yeah, all right.
Once you feel the logic, I'm trying to
take you off for a tangent to try and get you back.
No time for a tangent.
Right, go on.
Leon against Brighton, hence the nature of this questioning.
Yeah,
Leon against Barcelona.
Barca.
Yeah. Roma-Porto, who cares?
Roma.
Ajax-Real Madrid.
Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Should do. Ajax a good side, improving.
No, we did a piece in them last week,
but
actually.
They should have enough. Yeah, I'll listen to it.
I'm listening to you.
If I'm not here, I'm listening to you.
Great, so you're listening a lot then.
Yeah.
Liverpool against...
God an arse.
Bayern Munich are third, they're 9 points off Dortmund, as you felt the need already to point out. So Liverpool against Bayern.
Yeah, I fancy Liverpool. Too strong.
I think I'm with you on all them. Hey, mention of Leon. Did you see Memphis Depay's interview in the Sunday Times yesterday?
I listened to the pay-per-view as well, Joe, yesterday. I've had a lot of time in the car. I got the boat over yesterday, so I've listened to a lot of podcasts over the last 4 hours and everything. Very, very good. But
it's worth reading.
Yeah.
So Memphis Depay is a byword for mediocrity in the post-Ferguson era. You say to Manchester United fans, Memphis Depay, and there'll be another player that was bought in, one of many, and just didn't quite happen. Yeah, just of that ilk.
Matteo Darmian.
Exactly. It seems since he moved to Lyon, he's been great. He's had 33 goals and 33 assists in 84 league and European games. He was sipping coke and nibbling olives when he was interviewed by Jonathan Northcroft. Lyon has allowed me to be who I am, to be free on the pitch and outside as well. One of the interesting things was he said Van Gaal felt he was training too much.
Yeah.
He said, in my big, big house, I wasn't really happy. I was only 21, 22. And he said, we didn't fall out. It was just a misconnection, me and Van Gaal. As a team, we didn't play great football. He said, if you have talented young players, me, Anthony Martial, Luke Shaw, the others, they need freedom. So he talked about being out practicing his left foot and his crosses with Ryan Giggs, and Van Gaal called him in and said, why are you training? He said, I want to improve. He said, your crosses are fine. It's all in your head. It's kind of strange.
Sometimes Van Gaal could be right, but I'd be one. I listened to Damien Duff talking recently about trying to get hours into players and trying to get them training. Work on your weaknesses. Keep going on them. That's what I would be in favour of that as well. I'd be totally in favour of that. And it's interesting, you see, I think Van Gaal would have been, from that alone, it immediately sticks out periodisation. You know, less time in the training ground, get your body prepared for the next day. But how are you working on your technique? How are you working? If something isn't going right, what I usually used to find, if you know, you put a few bad crosses in, didn't happen a lot, Joe, of course, in a game, but you'd immediately want to go out and work on your crossing. You want to go out and work on, it's not going right, and then a few go wrong for you, and then you're trying to work on your right foot, little check back, wouldn't have been great, right, but just clip it into an area, put it into an area, we know the keeper can't come, you're trying to put it in, just little things like this. So you've got to admire him for doing that.
You feel more confident.
And yet you've got a manager that's saying no. He doesn't want you to work on your game.
And weirdly, he's got Ryan Giggs helping him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's...
But that would have been the culture from Giggs, that era.
It was the Cantona.
Cantona, yeah,
the
Cantona exactly.
Culture, yeah. So, and he talked as well, like, so, I mean, he came through as a number 10 in behind the striker, and Van Gaal sticks him out in the left wing. He said, it wasn't like you weren't allowed to dribble. It was just the many tasks that you had. When you give some players too much information, they think too much. And he says that was the theme. He was just weighed down with all of this stuff. And he said in the Mourinho
era, I get that from Van Gaal, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean...
Do you know, the dossier, like, you know, every time a player's coming off the bench now, and it's like, you need to be... You've got, like, an A4 bit of paper in front of you, and there's about 20 different things you've got to do on the pitch. Yeah. Like, you want to actually get onto the pitch and get into the game. Do these lads know that, talking you through all this, that you've actually got to go on and run around and you... There is nothing worse than coming onto a Premier League game off the bench. The pace is incredible. And you come off the bench and you are knackered after 5 minutes.
Gasping, yeah.
You are. You can't get your breath. Your calf muscles are aching. And you're trying to process these 20 bits of information that you've got to do on set pieces, to do when you're in possession, to do, you know, it is amazing. It is amazing sometimes, honestly.
So he was talking as well about the perception of him, because in the press he was billed as a party boy and nice car and out and about, and he said that, I was driving my nice car, I wasn't enjoying it. I felt like people didn't like me. They imagine I'm thinking I'm better than I am, or I'm better than them. I was struggling with that. I remember some of the quotes about me, like, party boy, that's just pure lies. I went out once in 1.5 years in Manchester. It wasn't even fun. I'm not a party boy, and talked about reconnecting with his Christian faith in latter years. He said, now, my life is very natural. I think I can be a main player at one of the top 5 clubs in the world. But football's not my only purpose. I'm enjoying being in the moment in the game, letting things flow. I'm not even at 70% of where I can go.
Just one thing, I don't know how much time we've got here, but just
like
one thing.
2-3 minutes tops.
Off the back of that is that there is a culture at times within football that you've, and I think probably in any walk of life it would be, you know, you've got to try and, you know, fit in with the Joneses, you know, fit in with them, you know, so you've got to have a certain car. If you've not got a certain car muscle, and he's gone to a big club like United, I've got to try and fit in here. I've got, and you know, for what, you don't need to do that. He needs a 6-bedroom house. What, he's living on his own. Go and get a nice apartment for yourself. Go and live in the city centre and get a nice apartment, or wherever, in the suburbs, wherever. Yeah. It's almost as if there's a need for you to conform to what the rest of the team is actually doing. And it's absolute garbage. It's rubbish.
See, he makes the point, I was only 21, 22.
Yeah.
So young.
Yeah, I know.
You mean... Most 21-year-olds don't know who they are, really. Oh, no. It's tough. So chuck like 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 grand a week at them, and all the pressure. It's like, it's madness.
I know, it is. That's the pressure that's been put on young players, isn't it?
It is. Meanwhile, Messi scored his 43rd hat-trick of the weekend.
Yeah.
Just want to mention that.
50th goal, club and country for 2018 as well.
Is that right?
Yeah. Amazing. It's not a bad season.
No, it's not bad.
I think Gary Lineker keeps tweeting around, doesn't he? Number 5.
Number 5 in the world.
Number 5 in the world.
Yeah. Not bad for the 5th best player in the world. Back in a second.
Yard of grass, he'll give you a move with a perfect pass.